The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period. Henry the Spencer, part one. It's an interesting character we're getting involved with. But first, we have to see what's gone on since last time. Well, the diplomatic conference, Picardy, had come to a close at the beginning of August 1382, while the furtive negotiations for the Treaty of Badajoz was still in progress. The French, who had expected more from it than the English, reacted angrily to what they regarded as a grave breach of faith. In the middle of August 1382, Charles VI's council met, probably at the royal castle at Compiègne, on the Ossey, north of Paris. They resolved to go ahead with the long-standing plan which had been suspended during the conference, to send an army to Languedoc and invade the English Duchy of Aquitaine. There is no evidence of dissent or even serious debate. If the Duke of Burgundy would have preferred a punitive expedition against Ghent, he certainly didn't press the point. Charles VI was to assume the nominal command of the army, receive the Oriflamme from Saint-Denis on August the 18th. A week later, the decision was announced in Paris at one of those theatrical gatherings which lent weight to so many of the great moments of the Valois monarchs. The young king sat in the great hall of the palace on the Ile de la Cité. His uncles, the Dukes of Burgundy and Bourbon, the Constable Olivier de Clisson, the leading citizens of Paris, and a crowd of counselors, lawyers, and prelates gathered round the steps of the throne as Philip of Burgundy declared that the English had rejected both peace and truce in spite of the generous territorial concessions which had been made to them. The king, Philip said, intended to defend his realm and carry the war to the English in Aquitaine. The army was summoned to muster in the Loire on Orléans on September the 20th. Freed from the constraints of the peace conference and still ignorant of the disasters unfolding in Portugal, the English ministers pressed ahead with their preparations for the expedition of John of Gaunt to Gascony and Castile. Charles of Navarre's old mercenary captain, Boudicat d'Albert, was sent to Pamplona to persuade him to open the Pyrenean passes to Gaunt's army. Gerard de Menta, the veteran of so many fruitless diplomatic missions to Barcelona, was instructed to make yet another attempt to interest the cautious king of Aragon. On August 9, 1382, writs were issued for the election of a new parliament, the third in a year, which was expected to approve these plans and make a grant of taxation to pay for them. Both countries seemed to be moving towards a decisive trial of arms in southwestern France, the first major campaign there since 1377. John of Gaunt passed the month of September 1382 on his estates in Yorkshire, while at Westminster the assiduous lobbying for a southern strategy in which he and his supporters had been engaged in for most of a year was undone by events. In the middle of the month, the Colonel of Foca returned to England, accompanied by a squire from the English army in Portugal. They brought with them the embarrassing news of the Treaty of Badajoz. The Duke's reaction when the news was brought to him in the north was an obstinate refusal to face facts. He would not accept that the fiasco cast any doubt on the feasibility of his ambitions in Castile. He would not even accept that the Portuguese alliance was at an end, or that the Earl of Cambridge's days in Portugal were numbered. Instead, he set about recruiting reinforcements and endeavored to stiffen his brother's resolve. Fogaca, who had never accepted his country's diplomatic change of face and knew Don Fernando's private views, may well have encouraged him in this. But to most observers, it must have been obvious that the case for sending an army across the Pyrenees had been much weakened by the fate of the other arm of the pincer in which Gaunt had hoped to crush the Castilian king. As the fortunes of the southern strategy waned, those of the northern one flourished. The council had maintained contact with Philip van Artevelde through the captain of Ghent, was unable to come to England. There had been busy diplomatic traffic across the channel throughout the summer. Three councillors of Ghent were at Westminster in late September. A draft treaty between England and the rebel towns was ready by the end of the month. The council, which had hitherto dealing with only the agents of Ghent, invited him to send a delegation representing all of the three great towns of Flanders to conclude the matter. At this point, a new element was injected into the situation by one of the most unusual and controversial personalities of the late 14th century. His name is Henry de Spencer, Bishop of Norwich. He was a worldly and flamboyant prelate, then in his early 40s. He belonged to one of the great military families of England, and his contemporary, the chronicler John Walsingham, observed He was cut out to be a soldier rather than a priest. In the 1360s, he had in fact briefly fought on the side of his brother Edward, then a professional captain in Italy. 2 decades later, Walsingham described him leading the gentry of Norfolk during the Battle of the Peasants' Revolt, wearing a steel helmet, body armor, and laying about him right and left with a double-edged sword, gnashing his teeth like a great boar. Despenser was, by all accounts, a man of rather wooden intelligence. There's a good reason to believe that his intervention in the war with France was really the doing of his chaplain, Henry Bowet, a cunning and ambitious clerical politician who ultimately rose to be the Archbishop of York. In March of 1381, when Bowet was in Rome on a routine diplomatic mission for the government, he persuaded Urban VI to issue 2 papal bulls in favor of the bishop, empowering him to proclaim a crusade at a moment of his own choosing against supporters of the Avignon Pope anywhere in Europe. He was authorized also to grant the indulgences of a crusader in the Holy Land to volunteers who were willing to enlist for a full year or make a suitable financial contribution. He was allowed to dispense clerks who volunteered for their obligations of residence to release them from authority of any of their superiors who might object. A 3rd bull, issued more recently, conferred upon him extensive disciplinary powers over the English Church for the purpose of forwarding the enterprise. Despenser had hitherto made no use of these instruments, and it's quite possible the English government knew nothing about them. However, on September the 17th, 1382, sensing that his moment had come, Despenser declared himself to be Pope Urban's nuncio in England. He published his bulls to every diocesan bishop and had them nailed up on the church doors and public places across the country. Needless to say, this is going to be interesting next time. So we brought Despenser in the play. Now he's going to act, and we'll see what he does to English plans for the year and for the future. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.